You may remember the story of Michael Rockefeller. He was the son of former New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller, part of one of the richest families on earth, when he traveled to what was then Dutch New Guinea, now part of Indonesia, back in the early 1960s. He was there to film a documentary and collect artifacts for a museum, but the 23-year-old Rockefeller's boat capsized, and he was never seen again. Author Carl Hoffman wanted to find out what really happened to Michael Rockefeller and traveled to Indonesia to retrace his steps before his death. Hoffman's book, Savage Harvest, tells that story. He's with us from Washington. Welcome.
Thanks so much.
Well, some people of a certain age may remember this story when it was going on, but you start this book with a version of what happened to Michael Rockefeller. Tell us what you believe, after having done all of this research, actually happened to him.
Well, it's a long, complex story, but the essence of it is that Michael Rockefeller was on a boat crossing the mouth of a river, a big turbulent river on the Arafura Sea in the southwest coast of New Guinea, and the waves swamped the engine of the boat, and it died, and they drifted for a while, and the boat flipped over, and they drifted for another 24 hours, and then Michael violated the first rule of yachting, which, of course, is never to leave the boat, and he strapped a couple of gasoline tanks to his waist, said, "I think I can make it," and swam ashore, leaving his companion, a Dutch anthropologist, on the boat. And the Dutch anthropologist was rescued the next day, and Michael was never seen again. But the rumors very quickly surfaced that he had, in fact, made it to shore and encountered a group of men from one particular village, the village known as Ochinep, and that he had been killed and then subsequently consumed by the men from Ochinep.
Consumed, eaten, because this was a cannibalist tribe, the Asmat. Tell us about them.
Well, the Asmat are a fascinating people. They lived in this world of swamp, 10,000 square miles of swamp. Even today, there's not a road, not a car, you know, one cell tower in the whole region. And the Asmat were constantly at war with neighboring villages, and they were important to their culture was headhunting and cannibalism. I mean, it was the very essence of their culture to balance the world. And, you know, life really couldn't flourish and couldn't continue in the community without reciprocal violence and without sending their ancestors on to the world of Safan, the land beyond the sea, and that required another killing.
And in this case, the killing of someone who was the son of the sitting governor of New York. And it sounds from your book as if the Asmat people had no idea what was coming after this one.
That's correct. You know, they didn't kill Michael because he was Michael Rockefeller. Being a Rockefeller meant nothing to them at all. I mean, one of the fascinating things is that sort of one of the undercurrents of the book is this, and the story is one of power. And Michael Rockefeller represented, you know, the was from one of the most powerful and affluent families in the world. And the Asmat were penniless, illiterate tribal people. And at the moment of contact, when Michael swam ashore and encountered this group of warriors, you know, he was probably the least powerful person on earth. And the killing of Michael was in some ways an effort to reclaim power in the face of both the church and the government efforts to, as they thought of it, as pacifying the Asmat, but really stripping them of their culture.
And how are you so sure that this is what happened, that he was killed and eaten? Because this has been debated for decades.
Well, the heart of the story, really, there are two pieces of it. One, I went deep into the archives of the Catholic Church and the Dutch colonial government. It was a Dutch colony at the time. And as it turns out, they were, you know, one of the most incredible things about this story is that he disappeared in November of 1961. As early as March of 1962, there were rumors, reports that hit the Associated Press that said Michael Rockefeller had made it to shore and been killed and eaten by the men of Ochinep. And those reports were denied by the Dutch government. I mean, I have all the original cables. What had happened is that after Michael disappeared, there was this huge search and rescue effort. Nelson Rockefeller and Michael's sister, Mary, flew to the area, spent about 2 weeks as the Dutch searched for Michael, and nothing was ever found. soon after they went home, two Dutch priests, missionaries, who had been living in the area for years, and they spoke the local Asmat language, heard rumors that Michael had made it to shore and been killed, and they looked into it pretty deeply and wrote these long reports. I mean, this one Father Van Kessel's report is thousands of words long, and it goes so deeply that it names names who had Michael's head, who had various body parts, and they filed those reports to the government, their superiors in the church and the government, and the government ultimately, you know, took those reports seriously enough that it sent this colonial patrol officer named Wim Vandeval to the village to investigate. But all of those reports were kept secret. And so I found all of these documents, you know, documents from the apostolic vicar, who was the highest Catholic Church official in Dutch New Guinea, saying, you know, this is a cabinet of glass. We must keep this secret. If you find anything, put it in a double envelope marked secret.
Why, though? Why did they need to keep it secret?
Well, it gets into complex global politics, but the Dutch were trying to retain Papua as a colony through the United Nations General Assembly, and Joseph Luns, the Dutch Minister of Foreign Affairs, was actually presenting the Luns plan to the UN the very week that Michael disappeared, and that was all predicated on this idea that Papua was sort of a nation in the making, and that headhunting had been eliminated, and it was just a big embarrassment to the Dutch government. And the church was proselytizing and didn't want anything to get in the way of that.
Some people listening to this may wonder why you decided to go through all the trouble of trying to figure out what really happened here. I want to just read from a little bit of your book here, and you talking about your interest in this. You say, "I like the idea of peeling back the layers of all the things that I imagined civilized us. And as an outsider, I often felt less alienated in those distant places where no one expected me to belong, where it was obvious I didn't and probably never could." All of which led me to the idea that traditional tribal societies living in the jungle might show me the root of something, of who we are. Do you think that you learned something about who we are from spending so much time with the Asmat?
You know, I think the Asmat are incredibly complex, three-dimensional people, and, you know, they have this language with 17 tenses and this incredibly rich, deep spiritual world, sacred world. So I think the killing doesn't make sense unless you can understand the Asmat. And ultimately, I came to this idea that, you know, the Asmat live in this incredibly rich spiritual world, and it's a world that we can't enter, and I never could. You know, there's no door, there's no window that we can climb through to enter their world. You know, you can say, well, they everything is in their heads, it's not real, but it's real to them, and that's what counts. And so I think there can be this great cultural dissonance happening, and ultimately I found that sort of optimistic.
Carl Hoffman, the author of Savage Harvest, A Tale of Cannibals, Colonialism, and Michael Rockefeller's Tragic Quest for Primitive Art. A fascinating book, disturbing at times, but really an interesting read. Carl Hoffman, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And we've got an excerpt of the book at our website, hereandnow.org.